Due to extreme technical difficulties, the part of Luftwaffe Smith will be played by Danzig.
Recording the podcast.
Head on the sign, by the way.
Be careful I don't hit my head on the Smash Burger sign. Hello, and welcome to a very special lunchtime edition of the After Movie Diner. And I feel like this is a bit like the daytime TV equivalent of our usual show.
Should we be a bit more like bland and impressive?
I don't know. Let's try and talk about diversity.
Today on the diner.
Yeah.
Dogs and their hats.
Or we could try
hats for dogs.
We could try and do like what Richard Madeley did and try and be a little bit controversial, you know what I mean? And a little bit sexist.
Can I leave that to your weird intro? If you're going to be controversial and sexist, it's probably best handled. Oh, the bacon barbecue. No, that'll be all. Thank you very much.
Yes, the chicken. Avocado club, I think. Crispy chicken. So I could make comments about Fern Britton's uterus.
So we don't need to wait for the intro.
And then maybe you could be like Hasselback and say like a whole bunch of...
Who's Hasselback?
She's that blonde tar off The View.
Right, I don't.
Who says a lot of Republican bullshit while Whoopi Goldberg rolls her eyes.
Oh, okay, sounds good.
Yeah, so please bear with me because I have some sort of throat thing at the moment. But... not like a disease, but just like it keeps drying up.
Have you been shouting for a week?
No, it's just you need to do all the talking.
You sure? Oh, I need to do all the talking.
All the talking.
Ugh.
So, unfortunately.
Did you hear that? That's the sound of 400 listeners turning off the podcast.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, traveling dendrophiliac goblin Jeff couldn't be with us today, so instead. We've got my regular co-host, James Wallace.
Wait, Travelling Goblin Jeff?
Travelling Dendrophiliac Goblin Jeff.
What's a dendrophiliac?
Someone who likes to fuck trees.
Why? What have you been doing while you've been away? What did you do in Vegas, man?
Well, I didn't fuck a tree, that's for certain.
No, but what did Jeff do?
Oh, well, Jeff gambled all his worldly goods on a book about how to be a dendrophiliac.
If he...
just the avocado consommé.
Oh, yes, look at that right there. Thank you very much.
Enjoy it.
Excellent.
I should have had that. That looks amazing.
Looks amazing.
I definitely should have had that. Why didn't
amazing.
I have that?
I don't know, because you're a useless orderer of things.
I really am.
But no, instead we have critic, and critic, Ray Dobble. And we're talking about Bone Tomahawk.
We are.
And for those of you who are interested, I interviewed the director of Bone Tomahawk over at Booth Talk from the After Movie Diner, a podcast which is available on iTunes. And you can also find all those details over at www.aftermoviediner.com. Check out Booth Talk for the interview with the director of Bone Tomahawk and lots more's interviews.
Question.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Should people watch Bone Tomahawk?
Yes.
Yes, they should. Should we quantify that or not? No, just...
I probably have a couple of qualifications.
Sure.
But it's mostly about the end of the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
So we talk about that at the end of the podcast.
All right.
But they're very small qualifications because... by and large, I really, 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 really liked it. I think it might...
give us a little bit of the plot. Then.
Okay, a little bit of the plot now. So the first thing to say about it is that it's billed as a horror western. And I feel like the horror part of the horror western is... there's not a lot of it. There's a bit at the beginning and a bit at the end.
By the way, the director doesn't think it's a horror.
Fine, okay, well, there we go.
I interviewed him.
Oh, well, there we go. Yeah, because it's not. It's a western. But anybody expecting a horror western, what you get is a western, but with...
cannibal troglodytes.
It's basically, yeah, it's basically a standard western, only with, like, horror bad guys instead of Indians.
Right.
Well, the plot is basically that... in a really cool beginning, two guys,
Sid Haig
and David Arquette. It's got an amazing cast.
Yeah.
Most of whom I didn't even recognise until halfway through the movie. I went, oh my god, that's Jack from Lost. Anyway,
yeah. Richard Jenkins.
Yes, and him. But he took longer for me to realise Richard Jenkins was in it. But Matthew Fox, I...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And Matthew Fox doing Val Kilmer doing Doc Holliday.
Yeah. Two guys stumble across... Two very bad guys, essentially, stumble across a burial ground.
Yeah.
And in the process, one of them gets killed and one of them runs away. And where he runs away to is a town. I've got a bit of a problem with the geographical logistics of him running away to a town that's a five-day ride away and him being pursued that far by the people, but that's fine. I mean, the desecration, I guess, covers that. But anyway, he runs away to the town. A town that is has Kurt Russell as a sheriff.
Yeah.
And initially it's set up, which I kind of feel like they could have doubled down on a little bit more and they kind of pulled away from it, which is a bit of a shame. But initially it was set up as a town full of nothing but old and sick people. Old people, sick people, and the occasional woman.
And Sean Young. In a blink and you'll miss it cameo.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, she's playing the mayor's wife, what?
Yeah. Very strange. It's a town run by Kurt Russell, who spots this bloke for a badden.
Yeah, because when the mayor does come in, he's kind of an ineffectual, like, wet sap.
Right, but that's leaping a little bit forward. You're doing what I did.
No, it's just not right.
Anyway, I know, I didn't bring her up. Because everybody's saying the mayor isn't relevant when you're the one that brought up the mayor. I know the mayor isn't relevant. That was my point.
This is what happened when Jim runs the podcast.
I don't mind running the podcast.
Hurry on.
Right, so two blokes disturb a burial ground.
Yeah.
One of them gets killed. One of them runs away to a town run by Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell spots him for a badden because he's definitely a badden. Shoots him in the leg to stop him running away. Leaves him in the jail with his deputy and a nurse repairing the guy's leg wound. Next morning, everybody's gone. The jail's been broken into, horses have been stolen. The nurse, the deputy, and the badden have all been stolen away in the night. They leave behind an arrow, who the town's resident, like Indian experts, knows it belongs to these troglodytes and where they can be found, which is about a five-day ride away, three if they hurry. So, the rest of the movie, most of the movie, is them travelling from this place, their town, to where the troglodytes are.
And Patrick Wilson, who is the female doctor's, because she's a doctor, not a nurse.
Right.
Female doctor's husband.
Yeah.
He has just come back from some war or skirmish or something. No, from working, right? From doing construction or gold rushing?
No, he's a cowboy.
He's a cowboy, okay.
And while he was repairing the roof, he fell off and broke his leg. So right. He's recuperating with that.
With a broken leg, but he comes along anyway.
Huh.
On a broken leg.
He comes along because his wife has been kidnapped.
And it's clear that he is very passionately in love with her.
Yes. So, the people setting out on this are Kurt Russell.
Awesome. That's
Sheriff.
Awesome mustache.
Yes. Richard Jenkins as his aging deputy.
But like charmingly doddery deputy.
Yeah, doddery deputy. The aforementioned broken legged husband of the missing woman.
Patrick Wilson.
And Matthew Fox as a white suited, you know, old fashioned mustache twirling bad guy.
Dandy who
feels he's a bad guy. Like if he could twirl a mustache, he would be a bad guy. But he feels responsible because he fetched the nurse and brought her. It was his decision to fetch the nurse rather than wake up the doctor because the doctor was pissed. So he feels responsible. And those are the four guys who set off on the journey.
He also may have, at one point, had designs on Patrick Wilson's lady.
Yeah.
Because there is somewhat of a rivalry between the two gentlemen.
So it would seem. And most of the movie is just their journey.
Well, the whole second act, really.
No, I'd say... Yeah, well, no, I mean, only if you... Yes, it's the whole second act. But the first act is very short, and the third act is even shorter.
Right.
So it's most of the movie is their journey. And it's very watchable and very elegiac. and it's got
good word.
It reminds me in part.
Hello, Giant.
Thank you very much.
You pull that out of.
Well, it reminds me a lot of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. Parts of it. A lot of the shots in Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. A lot of the shots are framed like old photos.
Right.
And in this one, a lot of the shots are framed like old paintings. It looks like to me, but they look like paintings of the Old West. And the movie is very, very much in love with being on the trail with these four characters as they make their way to what they contend is probably certain death.
Some of the scenes early on in the film are written almost in a sort of delightfully play-like way. Like there's a lot of
the
dialogue, the back and forth, the establishment of the characters is charming. I mean, especially like Jenkins and Russell kind of get the bulk of the opening scenes to kind of have like fun backs and forth with people. Russell and his wife, Jenkins and Russell, like they have some really nicely. It's stylized dialogue, but only slightly. Like
well,
it's not.
I'm not sure. I'm going to think you're right. I just think
meaning it's not quite like overblown Tarantino-esque or Bruce Robinson-esque, but it's got a
unfortunately the closest example is something you won't know, which is it's very influenced by Deadwood. It's hugely influenced by Deadwood, which is a western where they all talk in the way they do in this movie,
right?
In that way, in that stylized, slightly overblown, but very charming, very funny way. They all talk about that in Deadwood, and it owes a lot to that. The only slight problem that every now and then it overreaches a little bit. It's a little bit, that's a bit too much, but it's really, really cool. And when I say every now and then, like once or twice, but Deadwood does that too when you're writing that kind of dialogue. But it's
I mean, I thought when you had a pro like Jenkins performing it, he didn't really hit a bum note. You know what I mean? Like, I really love Jenkins. Like, I loved Russell, but Russell doesn't really have much to do other than be Russell. Like, he has a few moments which are really pleasing, but in terms of, like, delivering vast paragraphs of dialogue, he just doesn't do it. He's quite, like, sentence here, sentence there. And
Yeah.
Whereas Jenkins gets to do the whole, like, Jenkins gets to have a vocal tick, you know what I mean? Like, he gets to have something to play with.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, actually,
as does Matthew Fox, to some extent.
The only two moments in the movie that I felt where the dialogue slightly overreaches itself were actually both to do with him.
Oh, okay.
But then you're right. He's the one that has the most to do. He's the one that gets given the most fun lines. I don't think it's anything wrong. It's just anyway, it's tiny, tiny nitpicking, because most of the time, nearly all the time, the dialogue is brilliant and very funny and very engaging. And I think Russell gets some good lines, some good jokes. But you're right.
I mean, highest praise I can give it is probably a backhanded compliment, but I normally can't sit and watch movies in which very little happens for a vast swathe of it.
Yeah.
I normally, even with the driving momentum of, oh, they're back on the horses again and they're off to the next place, and apart from the little incidents they have where, like, they get hit by some rustlers and some various other stuff happens, really nothing happens. It's in the dialogue and the interplay between these four characters that's really driving the story. And normally I'm okay with that up until a point, but something like this could have lost me in the middle act quite quickly, and therefore it's a high compliment to say that it didn't, and I pressed on and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would go along with that. I agree with you about the play part too. I felt the whole opening with the Baden coming into the bar, Kurt Russell and his deputy in the jail, they felt like sets. And they felt like a stage. It did feel very play-like, that's true.
Yeah.
And then it opens out into this big, sprawling western where they have to go 5 days. And I think...
The only thing was, I felt, was... I don't know where they filmed it. I think it was California somewhere. But there was a thing to it where I felt like, even though it was meant to be taking 5 days... they probably just filmed like the other side of the same hill repeatedly, because it kind of all looks very similar.
I I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess.
Until the ending.
I'm not sure. I think they go through. But then, on the other hand, like, I took that to be one of the things about it that is cool is that it, you know, it takes them a long time to get anywhere because you forget, and this is something that you and I know or have learned, how big America is,
yeah.
and how vast it is, and how in those days there were, you know, there could be a cave essentially of monsters, you know, laying undiscovered, that if you happen to, you know, cross its, you know, ruin its burial path, they would come after you. But that's right. A possibility. And I didn't see the joins, you know, or the stitches of how the shoot was put together. I felt if there was some commonality in the landscape, that it was
a very quick shoot and a very cheap shoot. There was not a lot of money at all.
Well, I can understand that, and that's actually my problem with the ending, is to do with that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask you one question.
Because far away.
I know when it's set.
Right.
And all that, and I know that therefore it's probably true to a thing. I also know that the troglodyte people are completely made up. They're not actually based on anything at all.
No.
They're not even based on any historical research. They're just a totally made up monster in a cave, right?
Which is cool.
And while I'm not one to kind of say, oh, it's racist because there are no, like, Native American or black people represented in the film, particularly except one guy who gets killed. And then the Native American guy shows up in the bar and just gives them a bit of information.
Exposition Joe.
Right. Literally, Big Chief Exposition Joe. That's really who he was. A, did that ever bother you or cross your mind? Secondly, had they got a more sort of charismatic Native American actor, do you think it would have benefited to have had one of the four to have been someone of Native, so that you could take the edge off the idea, really, that they were going to, like, oh, Native people are barbaric cannibals and white people are, like, heroic, lovable, passionate cowboys?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a tough needle to thread when you're talking about making essentially a Cowboys and Indians movie. And especially when you're talking about, I mean, really, the Indians were the Texas Chainsaw Massacre family. Like, that's what they were.
Right, no, completely. And they're totally made up. They're not meant to be
Natives. I know. I get it. Yeah. But what I'm saying is the problem with doing it like that is that the reason that people don't make cowboy and Indian movies anymore is that the idea that Indians bad, cowboys good is something that's, you know, obviously gone the way of the dodo, because, you know, what cowboys actually did, and, you know, it was an invasion. Anyway.
Which is where, by labelling it a horror western and calling them monsters, you get away with it.
Yeah, okay, yes, I see.
Whereas if you just call it a straight western, you're like, well, okay, who do these, like, barbaric native cannibals represent?
Yeah, you're right.
If it's just what I mean?
Yeah, that's
because if
point.
It's not a fantasy creature, if they're not the Texas Chainsaw Massacre family, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're not, a better example would be the Hills Have Eyes. If they're not the Hills Have Eyes, like, mongoloid family or whatever,
mm-hmm.
who aren't human, but they are human kind of thing. If they're not that, then they are representative of natives, and it's not a particularly...
I think if I was going to be kind...
Not that the movie has to be PC, I'm not saying that at all,
I didn't watch it
feeling awkward, bringing up the point, because it's a good
but you're right, because it's what crosses your mind when you watch it. It did briefly cross mine. The only thing that crossed mine about, again, which is saved by the horror convention, is the black guy that gets killed is the first guy to get killed, kind of.
Can I take this for you?
Lovely, thank you very much. Oh, yes, you can, yeah. Thank you, cheers. The black guy that gets killed at the beginning, again, it's just part of, like, you know, I can't remember what movie it is where the black guy says that, you know, it's always a brother that gets killed first.
Scream 2,
there we go, yeah.
Her cameraman.
Right. So that kind of forgave that. But I think if I was going to be generous, if I was going to be kind, I'd say that whoever made it was trying to make a film about the founding of America, right? Where, as far as the people that were settling it and living in these towns and trying to bring law and order to the land that they were living in, they were trying to make theirs, the Indians would have appeared as savages. Like, that's how they referred to them. And they were barbaric, and they and they scalped people, and they, you know, they took people, and they kidnapped people, and that's what happened. And like, actually, the other way of looking at it is, well, they were just, you know, fighting a guerrilla war, trying to like save their homeland. But anyway, the point is that to the people who were actually settling the land, that's how it would have appeared. And I think that the point of the movie ultimately ends up being they all make the choice to go on the, like, none of them are compelled by some like social niceties or the idea of, well, we've got to protect the town. Like, it wasn't a sort of Precinct 13 where the, like, they came in, they took and they went. They didn't, like, they weren't defending their town. They weren't defending anything. They were doing, all of them made the choice, an individual choice, to do what they felt was the right thing, which was to try and rescue these people, even though they probably wouldn't rescue them. They were probably already dead, and they'd probably die in the attempt. And I think if he was going to talk about, you know, what the movie was trying to say, I think it's a movie about a bunch of people making individual choices, even if they're old and doddery, or they're a lawman, you know, with a wife to come home to, or moustache-twirling, selfish, vain man Matthew Fox. They all chose to go for their own individual reasons.
Just remind me, I have a point about him in a minute.
But in that context, turning them into monsters makes sense, because that's how they would have appeared to them. But at the same time, it also gets away with it because the dialogue is slightly arch and the characters are well worn and archetypal, and the Indians are like painted a weird like alien grey colour and howl through this thing in their throats, which is very cool, and they make this like horrible
like
noise.
A goat skull mask or something.
Yeah, you know, they turn them into proper
monsters.
You know, monsters. And regardless of whether it's PC or not, and I think they have the Native American guy in the beginning to say, look, I want nothing to do with these people. They're not, they might look like Indians
right,
to you,
no,
but
no,
trust
yeah.
me, they're not. But I think if you're going to make, there would be something attractive to somebody who wants to tell a story to have a bunch of cowboys go and rescue a family from a group of monsters.
Oh, here's another way to put it.
Okay.
Two things, right? When you said about the Native American guy at the beginning of the movie, right? What is it you constantly hear from Muslims about extremist terrorist fractions? That they want to distance themselves, that's not real Islam, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And these characters were like monsters that were sort of bastardized extreme versions of the Native Americans hiding out in a cave. Like killing people and beheading people and
yeah, okay, that's interesting. That hadn't occurred to me. But yeah, I guess
it literally just occurred to me right this second.
Yeah, that's true.
That could even be some sort of weird allegory for now.
Yeah,
and Afghanistan and looking for Osama bin Laden and all that.
Yeah, I think so, but only in passing, because the narrative, the story doesn't follow any.
No. I'm not saying that it's heavily writ like that. I'm just saying.
I agree. In a passing way, I think you're probably right. They may even have made that choice to put them in a cave to go along with that.
Yeah. So that's the one thing. The other thing is, and I'm just throwing these things out here as topics because the movie's great. I really love the movie. Go see the movie. I don't really need to dissect it. It's a Kurt Russell Western with fucking cannibals and awesomeness. Like, just go see it. I really enjoyed it. But the other thing, Matthew Fox, on the subject of the Native Americans, the reason why he's the villain of the foursome is that Patrick Wilson is playing basically Captain America, like basically tried and true, true blue American.
No. He's playing Love.
But that's what I mean. But what I mean is he's not... There isn't a fight in him except for love. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's not a soldier. He's not a...
he's a cowboy. He's a tough guy. He's a cowboy. He's good. He keeps a gun in his...
Right, but he's... What? Let me finish what I'm saying.
Sorry. No.
Then you have Richard Jenkins, who's like the doddery old deputy, who wants to be like a really good deputy, but is also, you know, fair of heart and naive of brain and... Right? Then you have...
I wouldn't call him naive.
Oh, he's a little bit simple.
No, it's simple, but that's not a world away from being... Like, he's not naive, because there's... You know, he's been a surgeon in the war. He's obviously seen a lot of shit.
So you think he's maybe a little bit, like, PTSD type thing?
No, I think he's maybe, like, a little bit... I think he's sad because he's lost his wife, and I think he's, I think he's grieving to some extent, still grieving.
I just mean he's a very basically the three of them, even Kurt Russell, who's like a fairly hard-nosed sheriff but with a heart of gold type thing. The reason why Matthew Fox is the villain is because he makes no bones about the fact that because his wife and kid, or his wife and mother...
No, his mum and sisters.
Mum, okay.
When he was a little boy.
Mum and sister, when they were a little boy, were killed by Native Americans. And therefore... no, I'm still picking up the fries. I'm good, thank you.
But I think that's important, because I think that had it been, his wife and kids... No, I'm just saying, had it been...
I haven't finished what I was saying about him.
All right. You always interrupt me.
I know, but I haven't finished what I was saying about the whole thing. Like, every time I've been trying to talk about character. Basically, out of the four of them...
Right.
Three of them you can, like, empathize with, right? And you can get on board with.
Right.
Right? Even Kurt Russell, who shoots people in the leg, really with very little justification...
Right.
He does it because he is a perceptive, hard-nosed lawman, but he's also got a heart of gold, and he's also fair, and he believes in, like, humanity and blah, 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 blah. Right?
Right.
And then Patrick Wilson and the deputy, yes, of course they have much deeper characters. I just mean that they are, to all intents and purposes in the movie, good.
Yeah, okay.
Right? And Matthew Fox's character, on the other hand, while what he is doing is a somewhat noble thing in admitting, look, I put your lady in harm's way, and I put your sheriff in harm's way, and this is my fault, and I will be part responsible. He's also on this, like, continuing mad revenge mission against anyone Native and anyone different. We found out he shot, whatever it is, 33 or 35?
126.
Okay. You made notes, clearly.
No, I just... It may have been like 124, but it was 120-something.
Oh,
okay. It was a lot.
So he's killed a lot of Natives, right? He also has no problem, like, shooting people who come into the camp without really, you know, Kurt Russell and everyone is going through this whole, like, show us yourselves, put your guns down, blah, 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 like, talk to us and all the rest of it. And Matthew Fox just walks back into camp and shoots them. Right?
He doesn't walk back. He just, they move forward and he shoots them. The point is that there's a... I see what you're saying about Matthew Fox, but I think that...
I'm saying he's put in there... We were talking initially about the Native American thing.
Right.
Right. And I'm saying that in both cases of the Native American who shows up at the beginning of the movie, and Matthew Fox put in there as a villain who's killed 125 of them or whatever,
right,
having the other three characters finding that either difficult, abhorrent, or just unnecessary, right... That's another way to show that you're not writing a movie that's just about...
Right, yeah.
That's what I was trying to say.
Okay.
But now make good points.
No, I think that's fair. I think the interesting thing about Matthew Fox's character is that everything he does is, to some extent, justified. In that you don't find out that he's killed 120-odd Indians until later on in the movie. But it's in the context of... In fact, after he's said... which again happens late in the movie, that why he does it. And the fact that it happens while he's a kid, if it happened while he was a grown, you know, while he was a grown man and his wife and his kids got killed by it, you go, yeah, fair enough, but there's an idea that, well, this happened right in front of him when he was a boy, and that's all, you know, that, like, hatred and desire for revenge is all he's ever known. But his decisions are mostly practical, in that he obviously values his life and his ego higher than anybody else or anything else. And I feel like, and I've only just realised this too, that the reason that he goes on the quest in the first place is less to do with whether he feels responsible or not, although he does a little bit. I think right at the end he talks about his vanity. I think his vanity would be irreparably damaged if there was a quest to go after people who had been stolen from the town, an incident in which he played some part and he wasn't part of the posse.
Right.
He would not be able to live with that. His vanity, he would not be able to live with it, and that's why he goes. But everything he does, like shooting the guys in the camp, you know, turns out later on, it seems like, was justified. Like, it seems like they
were
under threat.
And also, what's interesting is, as well, is that his spoilers.
Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers coming up. We told you at the beginning of the show that you should really see this film. But if you haven't seen this film, then just know that there are spoilers coming up. Coming up.
But his death scene, Matthew Fox's death scene, where you think this character is going to have not only a little bit of redemption because maybe he's going to save the other three, but also a little bit of, like you say, his ego is going to play out this like heroic death.
Yeah.
Because he says, I'm too bad to live, or something like that, doesn't he? He says,
I'm too vain to live as a cripple.
Right. Oh, yeah, too vain to live as a cripple, that's it. So he's got this, like, big, like, leave me behind and I'll blow the bastards up kind of hope. And then that doesn't happen. Like, he doesn't get to do that. Like, he...
No, he doesn't, but then that... Okay.
His heroic death is kind of... And his redemption is kind of robbed from him, which is also, in a way, its own justice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have to say, I felt like...
All right, can I say one... What? Two things. One, what we haven't talked about enough, I don't think, is that it's a really, really good movie. Like, I really enjoy it. It's the best Western I've seen in ages. Yeah. It's definitely the best Kurt Russell film I've seen since Breakdown, probably. It's really, really good. Really watchable. It looks amazing. The dialogue is great. Like, funny and cool and... it's interesting. It's a nice idea for a movie. And it all works. And right up until the spoiler point that you're talking about, I thought it was terrific. And it hadn't, you know, other than like a few tiny missteps with the dialogue, which is understandable given what they're trying to do, and especially if they were on a tight shoot, because I suspect that there are things that could have been cleaned up in an edit or with like,
oh yeah, they had one
shoot.
Or two takes at best.
Yeah, so that would explain why those things fell a bit flat. When
I mean,
they
the
did.
Director says, which is I think very good to acknowledge here as well, while we're praising it, that he said without a cast this accomplished, there's no way to make an indie movie like this, because if they were all amateur actors, they wouldn't have been able to have delivered the lines quickly in one or two.
No, they were
takes,
great, and they were all good. No, and I can see that, and they were all great.
I need to get more drink, but
okay.
Should I just back in 30 seconds?
Am I going to keep talking? No, I can't talk when you're not here. I can't talk when he's not here. I tell you what, we could talk about him if you like. If you want me to ask him any questions about his beard, about anything really, you can always tweet me. I'm often tweeting, retweeting Diner stuff, so you can find my Twitter handle. I think I'm at JEA Wallace. But you can ask me to ask him anything you like, especially like really, you know, weird, embarrassing stuff. Anyway, he's back. So.
Did you leave me a little treat?
No, not at all. Yes, so anyway, it's really, really good. And I really, really enjoyed it a lot.
Yes.
And it's
when
one,
it finished,
it's one of those.
Like, that's
yeah,
awesome. Yeah.
When it was on, it was one of those movies like the Darjeeling Limited.
Right.
Where I generally could have just kept watching it for hours. Like, I could have easily have watched them, like, on the trail, like, on their mission for hours and hours and hours. Like, it was very, very involving and just a great watch. My problem with it comes in the ending of the movie. I felt like Matthew Fox gave up too easily. I understand why, you know, the whole vanity thing, and maybe they didn't have the effects for it. If he'd had his leg blown off or something, that would have been more effective. But it wasn't big enough what happened to him, and he made a choice that didn't make sense to me. And also, the pacing of it left me unsatisfied, because they'd spent all of this time getting there, and then they got there, and then they were attacked, and then they retreated, and then they were captured. And I felt like, I mean, it was all a great setup. there's two parts of it. That part wasn't very satisfying. But then, when
like in the way that the attack was edited, and because they insisted on practical effects, you barely see something hit him, and the next thing you know, his arm is absolutely covered in blood, and you're meant to assume his hand is shattered.
Meanwhile,
Richard Jenkins takes a huge fucking rock just to the head and seemingly is okay, even though he has an open fucking head.
It's a long time coming, and the idea that these three guys, one of whom is an experienced soldier, one of whom is an experienced lawman, and one of whom is an experienced Indian king, arrive at this place with no plan, no scouting. They just go from journey to being attacked to captured, and it all happens too fast given how long the journey was. And then when they're in the cave, when it's Kurt Russell and Thingamajig
and the
bird in the cave, everything that happens in the cave, then that's very cool. Like that's because then they're setting up this idea
Disgusting, by the way,
disgusting.
Seriously, by the time you get to this end of the movie. You really, really need a strong stomach. I've seen all sorts of movies and I can watch all sorts of things, and I didn't look away in this, but it was definitely one of those things where I was like, oh, Jesus, fuck, they're going to show you the whole thing?
Yeah,
wow.
I was thinking, we'll stop doing this in a minute. No, they're still going.
Yeah.
But it was great, and that was, because what was cool is then it sets them up as, they're in this tiny little cave, and horrible, they've just been shown what's going to happen to them. And there's this idea of their only hope is this character who's been left behind, the crippled guy who got more crippled and has basically been left for dead.
And we think maybe has had his leg sawn off, we don't know.
Right.
There's this whole thing about amputation.
But what we do know for sure is he may not even make it, but if he does make it, he's going to try and drag himself without a horse another day and a half's ride, and he's the only one that may be coming to save them. And that's a really cool setup. But again, what happens after that is, like, you see him approach, that's fine, but like, and I like the idea of the cutting the thing out of the throat. That's a neat idea, although again I don't know why just blowing it has them like run towards him, but okay, I can live with that. But then he goes, oh, a back way, and like that's it. Like, that's his cunning plan, is he finds a back way. And then you hear three gunshots in the cave, and it's all over. That's it. And it's like...
No. The three gunshots in the cave is because your understanding is that Kurt Russell only has...
No, I'm going to talk about the very ending. I'm talking about while they're waiting in the cave, and he's coming for them. You see him approach.
Right.
You know, and he kills the kid that comes running towards him. And then the next thing, it's them in the cave, and you hear three gunshots from their perspective, and right. Then Blokey comes in. You don't see him. Like, when Kurt Russell finds out, okay, there's seven of them left. After we've, you know, poisoned those two, there's seven left, right? And how... You're watching a horror film, and you know there's seven bad guys left. How many of those seven bad guys do you want to see killed?
Well,
what do you expect? Right. And we don't see any of them killed. None of them. None of them get killed. They all get killed off-screen, outside the cave, by the guy before he comes in.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, that's it, the end. I'm like, what happens with Kurt Russell and the thing and all the rest of it is great. And everything is great, except for the interaction between them and the monsters. And there needs to be some kind of a satisfying battle between them. And either it can be a plan that goes wrong and it has to be improvised, or whatever. But there's no plan.
No, I know what you mean, but
there's no...
To play... Right, you're saying what I would normally say, right?
Right.
You really are. Like, when I'm talking, like, genre movies in terms of, like, what... How I want a satisfying climax to a genre movie, you're completely right. I want, like... I want a much shorter second act without them, like, just journeying all the time. And I want the last act to be a proper fucking, you know, showdown at the Cannibal's Corral, right? That's really what you want. And you don't want, like, people dispatched so quickly, and you don't want people captured quite so quickly. And when the guy does drag himself a days and a half fucking thing and shows up with one little pistol, seemingly, it shouldn't be, A, so easy, but B, you should probably see more of it. Now,
right.
Two things against that, though, because I would agree with everything you're saying, but two things against that. First of all, if you are making this movie, and your compromise is... With this budget, we can give you this cast and these two or three major effect shots. but then everything else has kind of got to be done either off screen or on a budget with stuntmen just flipping over when they get shot, right?
Right.
So there's or you can have it with like a no-name cast, cut half of the movie out and have maybe more effects and more whatever. I would always go for the way he did it. In other words, get this cast, play out the characters, do the dialogue, do the whole bit, and if you have to like shoot a few people off screen for the budgetary reasons, but you get to keep that amazing, gruesome, disgusting effect sequence with the
I agree,
sheriff.
That's more important for the movie, the effect sequence.
You know what I mean? Well, it's more important as well because it informs us so much. Even towards the end of the movie, it informs us so much about Kurt Russell's character and about Jenkinson's character. And to some extent, let me finish my point. Anyway, so there's that. So I think he made that compromise and that decision. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and this is something that I felt like you would actually say rather than something that I would actually say, is that I'm not sure the movie is about the action or the horror of there's a bunch of people in a cave who are cannibals who are scalping people and whatever. I think that's just a plot device. I think the movie is a strongly scripted character piece about all these people at this place in time, with a few allegories thrown in there and a little bit about, like you're saying, the birth of America and da 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 da. Maybe.
Yeah, but I have to disagree with you there. I mean, I have to disagree with you pretty strongly there, because it's not. Like, I understand what you're saying in that the characters are really engaging and the dialogue is really strong. And just like I'm saying, like, I would watch that movie for another 2 hours precisely because of those things. So that's all true, and that's a really good reason to watch a movie. But if you're going to, like you say, say, well, you know, how the ending goes down isn't important. What's important is the journey they take. Well, then they all need to take some kind of a journey. And I don't feel that, you know, an inner journey, as it were. And I don't feel like, just like Matthew Fox and Kurt Russell, I don't feel like any of them are any wiser at the end of the movie than they are at the beginning of it. Like, they haven't learned anything. They haven't been on any kind of journey where the satisfying conclusion is, well, it doesn't matter that we didn't see that happen because this happened to them. But if you are going to make a genre piece, because I think the strength of the movie, if we're honest, is it is a generic Western, but it's made with a lot of love. It's made with some great characters, some great acting in it. And it's got that feel of a really great Western that maybe only happens, you know, for like 5 or 10 minutes in any normal Western. That feeling of being out in the middle of nowhere, on the trail, you know, far from anything. You know, it's very magnetic. It's very powerful. It's very hypnotic.
Yeah.
Know?
It's not a popcorn action Western style of Tombstone at all.
But if you
don't go in expecting Tombstone.
No, definitely not. No, go in expecting you know, those bits in Clint Eastwood movies that go on forever like that. But,
right.
But with like funny dialogue and engaging characters. That's not trying to make, you know, big serious points, which
this
I liked it
doing
for.
Doing such a half-assed job of sweeping the sidewalk.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Sorry, Karen.
No. But like, I liked that it wasn't trying to make big sweeping points about America or their own personal journeys. I liked that. But if that's the movie you're going to make, and they are traipsing all that distance to do something, then that something has to have weight to it. Because whether you like it or not, or however much money you've got, or time you've got, it still has to have weight. And I feel like there was weight there, but not in the meeting between these two worlds, of the old and the new. You know, and that's what it's, you know, ultimately about, and what it's journeying towards, is the new world meeting the old. Even at its most savage.
Which is why I think it's a bit... I think it is a little bit... I wish now I'd fucking asked the director.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit like America going into the Middle East. I think it's exactly like that.
No, because they come... No, I disagree.
Because it's about the old... You're saying it's about the old world versus the new world. Right?
Right.
And it's about practices which to us or westernized seem barbaric.
Right.
Which immediately plays into that allegory.
No, I agree.
It's not a perfect metaphor.
I agree. There's definitely elements to it. But what really happens is, the closest allegory is not to anything happening now, although I think there are definitely, you know, echoes of it, because I think you're right. I think they made decisions about how it looked and what happened to reflect things that are still, you know, that are happening now. But the closest allegory is still what happened in the Old West between cowboys and Indians. Like, that's what it, because they did, you know, they managed to rescue their families from the clutches of the savages. Like, they survived.
Which is
the point of what happened. Like, they could have been killed in any number of interesting ways by diseases and animals and you know, the natives. There could have been any
Why
number
do you
of ways.
Think, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
If it's a big genre film and if the ending was meant to be horror for all the reasons we were talking about, even though the director thinks he was just making a western.
Right.
Why would you not? Because I immediately assumed when they got out of the cave that we would have one shot of them all back home.
Yeah.
Right.
What did he throw away at the end, by the way? I felt like that was significant and I couldn't see it because the JLM Entertainment thing was in the way.
What thing?
It was the last shot of the movie. Richard Jenkins throws something away.
Fuck, I don't know right now.
It might have been a stone, and there might have been a thing with like the four stones of the four people on the journey, and he throws a stone away at the end because that's like Kurt Russell has fallen or something.
Well, did he throw a gun away?
I don't think it was a gun. I think it was a stone. Anyway, I don't really know. But it was supposed to be a big, significant shot. I didn't know what it meant, which I feel like was a bit of a problem for your big, significant ending.
Well, no, I was going to say, like, if you'd had an ending where you think they all got home, or the people who survived all got home and everything was wonderful, and then maybe you saw, like, two more...
Yeah, that could have happened.
...troglodyte feet outside his window.
That could have happened.
And then it had gone, doom, and then ended. Would that have made it better or too hokey? Like, would you?
I think that would have worked had they had a. That would have worked. That wouldn't have worked with the movie they made. Like, the movie they made, which was more about the going in and the getting of them, and just the. In the end, all they needed was the courage to do that.
Right.
And I think something we haven't touched on, which I think is the most effective part of the whole movie, by the way, is. I really, really felt keenly. The magnitude of the task facing the guy with the broken leg.
Oh yeah.
Not just like when he's on the horse, it's bad enough, but when he's walking, and he's walking like days and days and days on this, with this crutch, and they're obviously in constant agony.
Yeah.
And like falling asleep on it, and all because he's going to get somewhere that more than likely he's going to find out his wife's dead, and then he'll be killed, probably in a savage, horrible, disgusting way. To keep going when that's what's waiting for you, I thought was extraordinarily effective. Like, I really, that's why I'm talking about him as love.
Yeah.
Because that was all he had, and that's all it was just pure, unadulterated love. And I think there was a question asked of anybody in the audience, like, would you be able to do this? I'm not sure, you know, and I think the director, I'm not sure I would, you know, like, limping along. Like, I'm not sure I'd get up on a horse with a broken leg and ride for days and days, but walk for days and days on a broken leg, just to get somewhere where you're not to get home, you know, to on the 99% your wife's going to be dead and you're going to be killed along with her. So I feel like the point of the movie is that he, just through like courage and determination, gets there, and ultimately, because he gets there, especially because it's a genre piece, because he gets there, he's going to kill them, and he's going to get the girl, and he's going to rescue them. That's all he has to do is get there as a character for that all to happen. And I think you can downplay how exactly that goes about. And he does have a clever idea, and okay, he does spot a back way. They went through straight ahead, and it all makes sense. It all fits together. I'm just saying that sometimes there's a difference, and I think you and I know this really well. There's a difference between something that looks really good on the page, or you know, as an idea, and somehow doesn't grab you, just doesn't have the same weight. And there's something that, you know, the opposite of that is sometimes things look terrible on the page, or you know, sound like a terrible idea and work fantastically and grip you. And I feel like this one, it all looked great on the page, especially if he had, as you say, like not a long shoot, not a lot of money, but it just didn't. It was only afterwards, after the movie was over, like when the movie was done immediately, I thought, that was great. I enjoyed the hell out of that.
Did it have anything to do with that awful song over the credits?
No, I just turned it off. There's always an awful song over the credits.
But it was like, whoa, cowboys!
Yeah, it was weird.
It was really weird.
It was weird and not good. Like,
no.
Probably the director's girlfriend. Let's face it. Anyway.
He's a very nice guy.
I'm sure he is. But...
when the movie was over, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I thought that was a great film. I loved it. It was only afterwards I started thinking, I wish they'd done a little bit more. I wish I'd got a bit, because Fox was a great character.
Yeah.
And I felt like he was just done, gone. I felt like Russell had a great character, and again, he was just like, you know, hit on the head, the end, you know. And I there was, although that was really effective, the Tom Hawk in the mouth like that, I really thought, oh my god, Kurt Russell's gonna die. Like, I thought that was, and maybe that's why Matthew Fox got done, you know, in the same way that Wash gets done in Serenity. Or suddenly all the characters could die. And when he was strangling Kurt Russell and had the Tom Hawk on his mouth, I thought, fucking hell, I think Kurt could be for it. Yeah?
I saw all of that that happened at the end, where, like you say, these four experienced guys, or three experienced guys, were taken out so easily.
Yeah.
I thought that was meant to play into what the Native American says at the beginning of the movie, which is, you won't come home. Like, these guys, like, you'll be all be dead before you even see them come. Like, these...
Well, that's true. That did work quite well with the telescope and them going, what do you see? And then they were attacked. That was very cool.
But meaning that...
That was very cool.
Meaning that these are, like, mythical creatures who, the reason why they have continued to exist in this, like, remote, shitty cave in the middle of nowhere is through, you know, almost superhuman strength and, like, incredible speed and all the rest of it. Like, they're meant to be, like, they're hunting the brown bears of humanity, you know what I mean? Like, these horribly unstoppable things. And I think if you don't pay that off, I mean, yeah, you could have had the standoff last a bit longer and then kill them off a bit slower or injure them a little slower. But if you don't pay off that these, like, you know, that we're all fucking doomed, and the only person who we even are counting on is this crippled guy, I feel like it doesn't have the weight that...
No, okay, no, fair enough. I do see that, but I still feel with the Fox character and the... I just feel like that scene... It didn't even need to... You know what? It didn't even need to go down like
shit,
that.
I gotta go.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, anyway... Yeah. Can I just very quickly say, actually, sure. You make a good point about that, and I think you're right. I think it does play into that. And maybe if I'd just seen those guys get killed by him, actually killed by him at the end in the cave, I probably wouldn't have thought a lick about it.
Right.
But the two things, because there wasn't anything anywhere, it seems lacking in that place. But I agree with you, actually. How it plays out there does play into to the end of the movie, and it does work effectively the way that they just... like hold up the German, and then, you know, something has happened so many times in the movie, they look through the telescope and this time they look through the telescope and then bam, they're all finished, it's over, and that was really cool. So yeah, okay, fair enough. So it's only that ending bit with the cripple guy. If I could have seen him kill the big guy, you know, the big one with the buck, if I could have seen him kill him with some clever way, you know, maybe he shoots him in the knees and then they wrestle on the floor or something, both of them crippled, something, you know, to give it a bit of like oomph at the end, some kind of, yes, this guy has triumphed over these people. There was not that moment was lacking. Everything else is brilliant. I really, really liked it a lot, and I definitely urge people to see it, for sure.
And I echo everything James just said.
Because
I mean, I didn't come away with it. My only criticism when I first finished watching it was that second act was a bit long. Yeah. Like, that was my only criticism of it, and I just think that's a structure issue, a slight pacing issue. It's not that I disliked anything that happened in the second act,
yeah,
or that I felt like it was too repetitive or anything. I just felt it was a little long in the middle. Like, I really loved the beginning, and of course I loved the end, because it's got all the genre tropes, but, like, the middle, while I enjoyed it, just felt a little long. That was, yeah, like my only criticism.
I agree. I think if they could have taken 5 minutes out of that and stuck five minutes in on the end, I think it would have been perfect. As it is, I'd say it's a four, maybe even a 4.5-star movie, and yeah, it was so close to being a five. If it, yeah,
but
trimmed
we
a little
got,
fat, and
my feeling is out. We got. I enjoy probably one in every 300 westerns. Like, I'm not a huge western guy.
No, I'm not a big western fan.
But
they have to be really good.
But when a Western comes along that I enjoy, you know, be it Tombstone or Westworld or, you know, whatever it is, when a Western comes along that I enjoy, I really fucking enjoy it. And this was one that I really, really, really enjoyed. And
do you know what we're talking about? I love westerns. I'm not wild on like 50s like John Wayne westerns. I don't know a lot about them. I've seen John Ford films.
I like the spaghetti westerns. Have to be properly bonkers for me to like them.
Spaghetti westerns, I really
they're
like.
The only ones are great, but I much
like Plains Drifter, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid.
See, Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, I love.
Yeah. All the spaghetti
westerns. I love the original Django. Is amazing. I even like the official Django sequel with Franco Nero, which I forget what it's called, but the one with him and Donald Pleasance, which is incredible. Which is basically like Rambo 2, but with Django, basically.
Nice.
But anyway, this one I really, really enjoyed. Be aware you need a fucking strong stomach for the end of it, and also be aware that you really probably have to kind of dig westerns in a way to really enjoy the middle bit.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, but good movie. Well done, everybody. And listen to Booth Talk for the interview.
Booth Talk.
It would also be excellent if everyone could go over to www.patreon.com/aftermoviediner and sponsor the show. The reason why we haven't had an episode in a long, old time, and the reason why the certain bits of this episode sound a bit different and so on, is because we're actually using a friend's equipment, because our current computer setup is all broken and we can't use it and it needs to get fixed. So we really, really, really need the listeners' help to sponsor and support the show so that we can update our equipment and get back on track with the show. So that's www.patreon.com. That's patreon.com/aftermoviediner. Please do support the show. If you don't want to do it that way, you can also look up MISC, M-I-S-C, plumbingfixtures.bandcamp.com. And pick up one of our albums. That would be absolutely tremendous. That would also help a lot. That's MISC, M-I-S-C, plumbingfixtures.bandcamp.com. Please do invest in the show so we can continue to bring you the kind of programming you really love to hear. Thanks ever so much for your support, however you choose to show it. And we'll be back again next week with another tremendous show. Kurt Russell and his mighty mustache cut quite a dash in bone. Tomahawk, in bone, tomahawk. Boom, tomahawk. Boom, tomahawk. Tall.